papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
It's the Media Project, a half hour of commentary, analysis, and sometimes even some insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Good morning, sir.
Good day.
Good day, good afternoon, good evening, depending upon what time it is that you are hearing this.
Exactly right.
Yes, yes, indeed. And at any time, thanks to WAMC.org, where you can download this. Ira Fussfeld is here, a longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and Associated Publications.
Good day. Nice to see you all.
Good to see you. Back from California, I believe.
No, not for a while. A couple of months. But, I have to keep my citizenship in New York.
This is a good thing.
Yes.
And Judy Patrick, vice president of the New York Press Association, and again, longtime former. These are words that we use a lot around here. Editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady.
Nice to be here.
And I don't know if you mind, but when you say long time, that suggests she's still there or I'm still at the Freeman.
Yeah.
And I'd rather not be still there.
Meaning no disrespect.
No, not at all. I wish my former colleagues well, but I'm happy that they're handling it.
Yeah. Well, it's a tough line of work these days.
Yeah, and we thank Rex for still hanging in there and doing the work
That's
for
right.
us.
Now, he's a long time, but he's still doing it.
Oh, yeah. I remember Tom Brokaw writing when he was anchor of the NBC Nightly News, but he was in about 60 or in his late 50s, and he said, "It's been a long time since I was the young man in the room." And I feel that way, too. I can't believe that I'm not still perceived. I walk into a room and I think, well, people probably think, well, here's this young man. Who is he? Nobody looks at me and says, who's this young man? Except that I went to visit some friends at a retirement community. And
That's what we all have to do now.
Yeah, do that more.
So they call you Sonny.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great thing. All right. There are media issues. By the way, just to finish a little bit of business from last week, that is, we were referring to the divisions in the Episcopal Church over LGBT rights. It was a story we were talking about, the difficulty of reporting on religion, and Kaylin Brown referred to a church in Albany that no longer flies the rainbow flag. A member of St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in Albany says, "We are still affirming and welcoming to all, including LGBT persons. We do, however, typically hang the large rainbow flag only during Pride Month in June. A smaller one hangs all the time in our window on Main Avenue." So just to clarify, that's not a result of a change in stance of the Episcopal Diocese of Albany. And you can have your views aired here, media at WAMC.org. Ellen of Mahopac writes to ask...
Mahopac.
Really? Mahopac.
Mahopac.
Huh. It wouldn't be like the Coho salmon either.
Now that you mention it, there used to be a broadcaster in the Hudson Valley who pronounced it the way you just did. I grew up as a Mahopac.
Well, you would know. Broadcaster's probably from South Dakota, as I am.
And my wife worked there, so I know it's Mahopac.
Mahopac. Okay. How about that? Ellen, anyway, says, "I write to ask you to consider and discuss the care or lack of care that the news media take when describing news events, particularly tariffs. For example, the headline stating that Trump is putting tariffs on Mexico is misleading. Trump is putting tariffs on goods from Mexico, penalizing U.S. consumers who will be paying higher prices on goods." You get a lot of complaints about headlines, don't you, in the newspaper business?
You sure do. Reporters get them all the time, and the reporters don't write the headlines, so it's a shame. But it's awfully tough. I always felt that the headline writing was the most difficult thing I did in journalism. It's very hard to write good headlines and clever headlines. And
avoid nuance.
Yeah.
And they typically have to be short, which is one of the problems. You have subheads where you can put a little bit more information, but tariffs on Mexico is a lot shorter than tariffs on goods from Mexico.
Yeah.
It is hard to explain, but I mean, there are experts in this field. We call them copy editors, and that's their challenge. But I've heard many reporters explain to their sources that they don't write the headlines, and that's often the chief criticism of any story that gets published.
And yet it gets a little bit more nuanced than that, because often you and Rex and Ira have all written headlines, and I was managing editor of the Hughes Herald in high school.
The Hughes Herald?
Yes, and I knew about that. I was so pretentious, I used to sign my articles, H. Seth Shartok.
Hey!
But the one thing that you do know is that you may go a little too fast, but people who are writing headlines are trying to capture what was in the story. So when the reporter says to you, I don't write the headlines, often they had a little something to do with the way that the story led the headline writer to write.
You know, and towards the end of my career, I was asking reporters to write a suggested headline.
Oh, mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because often we want the story to go on the web really quickly, and if they've done it, they're the one who knows the story the best, and they're the ones least likely to put an error in a headline.
Yeah, that's right. Our reporters now also have to write a web headline because we actually write our stories in the web content management system. So we publish it first, and then it's scraped from there to go into print. But the difficulty of a print headline is that you have certain design standards at a paper so that if you have a, and not to get too technical here, but if you have a column that is 19 picas wide, you know that that headline in the lead position is going to be 60-point type. And fitting something into 60-point type is not the same as fitting it into 48-point type. You can say a lot more in 48-point, but that would be a violation of your design standards. So that makes it very difficult.
Yeah. So, Rexy, I know you haven't gotten around to it yet, but you're going to congratulate WAMC on $1 million fundraiser.
Oh, man.
Absolutely. And you're going to congratulate the Times Union on selling all its subscriptions that it did last week?
No, I hadn't planned to.
Oh, okay. We're always happy when people buy our content, whether they do it on public broadcasting or newspapers. But it's a great thing, Alan. Way to go.
did people love the Media Project? Did you hear feedback on
we
us?
Did. Great. We heard a lot about the Media Project. People would occasionally write, you know, we have a little spot for your favorite program. And the Media Project did quite well.
So are you going to thank those of us who contribute our time in enabling the Media Project to be a big hit, thus you getting $1 million?
No, the answer is no.
Oh, that's what I thought.
You know, you talk about one of the values of WAMC that I've heard you articulate, which is true, is that you're covering such a wide area and that you are presenting news in areas that would otherwise not have it. It's not that a public radio station that has as broad a reach as this one does can substitute for a local paper, but there are what are known as orphan counties. Columbia Journalism Review just did a piece about this, about those counties where broadcast in particular just doesn't have a footprint at all. And there's a lot of that. There isn't really a lot of TV news coverage, for example, in the Berkshires, right? They're missed by Boston. They're not picked up much by Albany. And there is no television to speak of in the Berkshires. And so if you want news delivered electronically, you really have to go to WAMC for that particular.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that. WAMC is, obviously, we heard a great deal from people in Massachusetts. However, there's a huge fight on about the fact that the cable does not carry more Massachusetts State House news and going on. And there's a great fury about that. And I think it's appropriate, you know, that there be a channel that brings you what's going on. Because right now, everybody thinks that Governor Andrew Cuomo is their governor in Western Massachusetts.
Right, and this is happening in orphan counties across the country, and they're appealing to the Federal Communication Commissions to change the metro areas, the designated population areas where these stations are covering. It's a classic case, but you know, this is all over-the-air broadcast, over-the-air radio and television. In today's, you know, digital world, the people in Berkshire County, for example, could easily tap into the TV and radio stations in Boston if they really wanted to.
Well, yes, but it takes a certain technological know-how in order to do that. And I have to say, during the fund drive, which was very short, 2.5 days, we heard a great deal from people who were saying, I listen in the car, I listen in the car, I listen in the car. And at one point, I was disturbed enough to say, by the way, folks, I'm going to give you a bulletin here. The radio works in your house also.
It works wherever you are because you have your handheld device. Actually, the Berkshires are cited in this Columbia Journalism Review article as one of those orphan counties because it doesn't get that kind of television coverage, which is how most people get their news. My brother lives, for example, in Durango, Colorado, which is in La Plata County, Colorado.
Now, that's your brother, the preacher?
Well, he's an educator. He spent his career in education.
Okay,
he was the head of a Quaker school. And Durango is actually in the Albuquerque designated market area. And so they're getting all this news. The same thing as Berkshire County. They think that their governor is somebody from New Mexico rather than the governor of Colorado.
But generally speaking, this points to a problem throughout this country because you have, what do they call them, deserts or orphan counties, and you've got news deserts where there is no newspaper and there's less coverage in those newspapers than there used to be. So although there's all of this media and there's all of this information floating around between the traditional sources and the newer sources, it seems as if people are less informed because they're not, unless they're really working hard to find news, what used to be right in front of you is no longer there.
Well, you know, there's a very good governor of Massachusetts, and my problem is that we keep asking him to be on our air. When people say, how come we can't have the governor of Massachusetts? We're always having the governor of New York on. A, the governor of New York knows the station, knows it well, and wants to be on all the time. Whereas the governor, Charlie Baker, in Boston, doesn't know from this end of the state, I'm afraid. So we keep asking him to come on, and he doesn't. Mike Dukakis came on one time. He asked to come on because he saw an article in the New York Times about Cuomo being on all the time, and he said he'd like to try it. And he made me ask 792 questions, which were answered by a yes or a no. And so it was not really a good outcome during that. Years later, I met him at a cocktail party, and he said, how did I do? I said, you weren't very good because you answered with a yes or a no. And Kitty Dukakis was on the other end of the room, and he yelled out at the top of his voice, Kitty, come over here. This guy says I was no good on the air.
But you know,
with Cuomo, you'd say good morning, and you were off to the races.
He wasn't wearing an army helmet when he did the year.
Right.
Now, what about Deval Patrick? He was on often, wasn't he?
Deval Patrick lived in Richmond, which is right next to Great Barrington.
So he was a listener.
And he loved the station, and his wife, Diane, loved the station, and so we could get him quite easily.
Mm-hmm. Well, that does speak to exactly this point, that people don't perceive the market to be, it's a small enough market. The Berkshires are, in the context of Massachusetts, this is what you hear all the time from people in the Berkshires, mm-hmm. that they are the forgotten corner of Massachusetts because the population is all in the East. And so they're not served as much. Difficulty is that even with the most assiduous efforts by WAMC to cover the community, it doesn't match the depth that a newspaper goes in these small communities.
Let's go. That's right.
But it's true. I mean, you have a local newspaper.
That from the Department of Self-Serving.
But it's just a fact that one story a day or even
two
do not match what a local newspaper can do. And so as local newspapers are increasingly financially challenged, communities end up without that kind of information that citizens used to have to rely upon to make their decisions.
But my dear friend Rex, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, you can. Go ahead.
No, you can't say we do it better covering the local stuff and then come on and say, unfortunately, now we don't have the money to do that anymore. You see, it's a false premise.
Well, we do it better when we have the wherewithal to do it. If we're not covering it all, we're not doing it better.
Okay, so let me say that WAMC has a series of bureau chiefs. We have somebody in Springfield. We have somebody in Pittsfield. And they cover an awful lot of local stuff. And I know that because I get letters from people saying, what do we care about?
Complaining, yeah, right.
You know, not to be critical of WAMC, which I love and I don't intend to be critical, but the fact is, if you have a story about a town board in a newspaper that runs 15 or 18 inches, if you took that story and tried to read it on the air, it would be much too long for your typical newscast. So the people who are covering these small communities for you and on the radio are not going to generally present as long or as an in-depth report as a newspaper.
Okay, Ira Fussfeld, member of the WAMC board and a great critic in the best sense of the word. Let me just say you're wrong, and here's why.
How can that be wrong?
I'm about to tell you something.
Okay.
I listen to our bureau chiefs, as we say, in each of these places, and there are days I want to drive off the road because the reports are too long. They are too long.
Yeah.
On a local subject, which may not be, you know, helpful to somebody in Canajoharie.
Absolutely,
or
which is exactly the point that Ira is making, which is why radio, as it's practiced, can't do what a local newspaper can, which is why the loss of local newspapers is such a loss to little communities, because there's no way you can cover all the communities of the Berkshires and the Catskills and the Mohawk Valley and the North Country and the suburbs of New York City, all of which WAMC reaches. You can't cover all of that the way all the local newspapers in those communities do.
Well, Rexy, with all due respect, you can sure try.
Well, yeah, yes. But you get, Alan, can't you concede that there may be some value to some other media other than WAMC?
Well,
you
know, no,
thank you for
no, but
having
I think
humility here.
That's what I'm known for. But I do think that you've presented it extremely well. We know that newspapers did it. They did it well in their local communities, and now the resources are drying up, and they can't do the same thing that they used to do. WAMC, on the other hand, for those of you who are listening maybe in Nacogdoches, Texas, WAMC runs from outside Boston to all the way over past Cooperstown, from way up in North Country, including all the way up to the door of Montreal and inside Montreal, and all the way down to New York City. That's a huge area, as Rex has just pointed out. And you do what you can.
You do what you can. Here's one solution. McClatchy, which is one of the major and fine newspaper companies, it has 30 newsrooms around the country. McClatchy has said that it's going to drop a number of its papers from 7 days a week to six in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, in Durham, North Carolina, and in Bellingham, Washington. They will no longer print on Saturdays.
Wow.
And this is somewhat similar to, of course, what the Newhouse papers did, including Syracuse Post-Standard and the New Orleans Times-Picayune and Mobile, Alabama, Cleveland. These papers now only put out a full paper about 3 days a week in most of those communities. And the rest of the days, they have just sort of a shrunken version of a sort of print scrapes the web and puts out a little paper. But they only do home delivery 3 days a week, I believe.
You know, I've been very interested, Rex, in what you've been saying over the years about the direction of print versus online. Now, online presents a whole different bunch of options and possibilities that is not possible in the print. Once you design the paper for the next day, you can change your online, but for the most part, most people don't. And that's fascinating to me, how you reconcile those two.
Yeah, I have always thought that reading a print newspaper is a habit that we should encourage. And once people break that habit, they won't go back. When you don't print a paper on a Saturday, for example, you're missing the local sports scores. What if somebody died? You're not going to know until the next day unless you go online. I mean, they have promised that they are not going to cut their coverage and that the savings they're going to realize is simply from the production of the newsprint itself. Let's see if that really happens and whether maybe some of the money they save will be put back into covering things.
Well, why would you think that? I mean, the whole idea is that these are profit-making newspapers for the most part. You know, I got to tell you that in the old days, the Berkshire Eagle did not publish, I believe, on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And so Saturday was the big paper. Now, my column has been appearing on Saturdays for a long time, and I like that because that was the day that everybody read over the weekend, don't you see? So now we have Sunday editions, and fewer people are paying attention to me, and that's bad.
Right, and the editors don't care. So, oh, I didn't mean that. I'm sure the way
well,
it came out.
Saying
I think
on,
you did mean it.
I've been saying on this program for at least a couple of years that I thought what you were going to see was not the death of newspapers, but the elimination of days of publication. Rex just cited a bunch. My former company several years ago cut the publication schedule in Oneida, New York, a little tiny paper up there. And it, as Judy points out, you're saving an incredible amount of money on newsprint, and you're saving an incredible amount of money on delivery.
Right.
But it's not going, as Judy suggested, it's obviously not going back into making
it up.
It should,
but I...
should and is different words.
I suspect that a small amount of it will, but because they will realize a lot of savings, I think they'll put a little bit back, but certainly not most of it.
Ira, you're just wrong.
No, well, I'm the only one in the room here who's a former publisher.
Yeah, well, and shilling for the industry.
Here's what happened in Myrtle Beach when they went from publishing 7 to 6. Because digital subscriptions increased by 8%, revenue wasn't affected, and virtually no one canceled their subscriptions. But that's also because people didn't care much about the Saturday paper.
That's right.
I put my column in the Saturday edition also, and I'm cognizant of the fact that it's not very widely read.
I read it every week.
But you
more widely read than Monday.
Well, that's true, too.
I had a local columnist who was writing 2 days a week, and we added a third, and I wanted it in Saturday because I thought and hoped that it would drive circulation in the Saturday paper.
Did it?
It did not.
We all dream about our columns driving circulation, and it doesn't.
No, that's not true. Mine does.
You know, in talking about digital subscriptions being up 8%, what's the base? I mean, it could be 8% of 20 subscriptions, so that would have been helpful.
And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago regarding digital. We were wondering why the New York Post is not charging for its digital content. It's giving it away. And there was a story that came out last week that the New York Post is heading towards now putting up a paywall.
They will have to do that. You can't keep giving away your major product and assume that you're going to be able to make money.
Well, wait. Wait just a second here. There's a big difference between the way Murdoch conducts his business. He's always lost money on the New York Post, right?
Yes.
Always. And why is that? He wants to be read in the White House, we think. He wants that relationship with Trump, we think. He's got enough money so he doesn't have to worry about it. And I think the same thing may occur, that he wants more eyeballs on his newspaper. And he knows full well if he puts up a paywall, he'll have less eyeballs.
Yes.
But he is going to be putting up a paywall.
Let's see what happens.
And they're doing a lot of other things there, which actually what I'm just reading about what the Post is going to be doing, the New York Post, again, this is not the Washington Post, reminds me of what Judy's former employer, the Daily Gazette, is doing, adding enterprises. For example, the Gazette just announced that they're doing a new printing operation so that if you want to get a big plastic banner for the side of a bus or something, or you want to put a sign on the side of your house, you can actually go to the Daily Gazette building, and there's a subsidiary of the Gazette that will do that printing for you. And isn't the building being used for storage facility?
Exactly. It was built for a much larger workforce than they have now. So they had a lot of extra space and were heating and, you know, fixing the roof on it. And they needed to, you know, convert it into other things.
So what do you think you'd store in a building that was once?
It's a great big warehouse space. So I think there's a logistical place there. There's some computer software stuff.
But, you know, it's kind of like, think of the Amazon revenues actually enabled Jeff Bezos to buy the Washington Post. So we can think of John DeAugustine, the publisher of the Daily Gazette, as our local Jeff Bezos, right?
You know, I'm hoping to win the $500 million Mega Millions, and I too can run a newspaper like a vanity project like Jeff Bezos. And
that's a very interesting point. You know, the Boston Globe just ran a very highly laudatory piece about what we've been talking about for a long time here, which is that the Berkshire Eagle got a bunch of millionaires together under a former judge, Judge Rutberg, and, you know, now they are running it, and it's getting a lot of praise because, after all, they're running counter to what's happened to all those newspapers that have to make money, you know, in the country. So one wonders whether or not that's the new model, whether that's where we're going, like NPR or NPR stations. Could be, right?
Yeah, there are 8,000 newspapers in the country. Are there 8,000 billionaires?
Yeah, I mean, that's the new model. If, in fact, the private owner doesn't mind losing money, because it appears that that's where it's heading with most of these publications. That's why, although my former company, which is owned by a hedge fund, which has got the worst reputation in the world for gutting newspapers, whoever sold that newspaper company to this hedge fund knew what was going to happen. Who's the villain? Is it the company that sold it and reaped all of this money as a result of the sale? Or is it the hedge fund, which is doing what hedge funds do because they don't want to lose money?
And why they buy in the first place?
Because there's enough money initially to make money, and then they can continue to drain it until it dies, as many people believe is going to happen with the newspaper industry. So they're going to squeeze them dead. And I can't defend that, but I wonder, who are they, the villain, or is it the people who sold it to them in the first place?
Or is it American capitalism?
It's giving your pet dog to someplace where you know it's going to euthanize the dog as soon as you hand it over. But I don't care. I got my money for the dog.
Mr. Chairman, I wondered if I could go back.
Sir.
I wondered if I could go back just for a second to the model of the billionaires under the judge who bought the Berkshire Eagle. We know that virtually every model has its own potential traps in it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have, you know, a bunch of billionaires or millionaires who are saying, okay, we want this, and you have one person, as I've often talked about, the iron law of oligarchy, then the potential downside in something like that is that somebody is, as I think you said, Rex, running it as a vanity press. In other words, their ideas become foremost in terms of how the thing is being run. And that is a potential problem.
It is always a problem. Whoever controls the aspect of the media, whoever controls it, is actually has the capacity to do that. But the sense is that credibility really is the only reason why people would buy a publication, if they believe it. So if the theory is that if your content is so skewed, either by the story selection reaction or by the way you present it that it isn't trustworthy, then people won't continue to buy it. It's a flaw in the market.
I hope you're right, Rex. I don't really think you are. I think if there's one major newspaper in a market, people tend to buy that newspaper. And I'm not saying that the decisions that they're making are vain, but if there are five people sitting in an editorial conference, and we all know that, and I asked the judge about this myself at one point, and I say, do you participate? He's now the publisher and the quote owner, and he says yes, and you know, it's quite clear he meant vigorously. That makes him the head oligarch in the Iron Lord of Oligarchy.
But they're not going to continue to buy it if there is less news in it over time. Right now, the Berkshire Eagle has been just the opposite.
They've absolutely put quite a bit,
right. But if that turns around, if the finances are such that they can't sustain it, people are not going to buy it, and they'll be willing to settle for whatever the online presence.
Yes,
is.
Except Ira, right now, the people who are financing it seem very happy and are willing to go along with
it. That's great, and I wish them well. I wish there'd be somebody like that in my market.
Right, and in the billionaire model, Bezos has had a hands-off attitude towards the Washington Post. It's very clear that he doesn't get involved in it. Now, with Murdoch, apparently his stamp is all over the Post.
Right. Notwithstanding the president's claims, you know, he refers to it as the Amazon Washington Post, but of course we know his credibility. Right. And the fact is that Bezos doesn't actively engage with the management or the operation or the content of the Washington Post, not at all.
Mr. Chairman, I wondered if I could just give you an alternative view on that one. And that is, the Washington Post is well known, and I think it should be, and I think it deserves all kind of credibility for being a very liberal bastion.
No, sir. No, that's not true. The editorial page is not as liberal as the New York Times.
Right.
I think the reporting is accurate and thorough. I don't think it's accurate to say that it's a liberal bastion.
Well, we disagree on that, and I read it every day. I think it is. And I think the interesting thing about the way that the paper is presented is that it does show us that the money that originally went into it, in my opinion, and not yours, Rex, obviously, is that Bezos bought the paper and it's doing what it has always done, which is to be a progressive and liberal institution in the United States.
Okay. We're out of time, unfortunately.
It's okay, meaning?
No, it's not viewed than that in the industry.
Well, you people all put your heads together and tell me what's what.
We will. We'll get back to that next week. We will put our heads together and try to tell him what's what.
It won't work.
Ira Fussfeld of Kingston and Judy Patrick, New York Press Association, Alan Chartok, and I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union. Thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally...